Recovery Elevator, episode 479.
I had all these plans that I wanted to do, but it felt like there was this like wall that I kept running into, which I can picture the wall as being alcohol, and everything else was on the other side, like a happy marriage, healthy life, you know, progression in my career.
Welcome to the Recovery Elevator Podcast. My name is Paul Churchill, and I'm so excited to be here with you today. On today's episode, we have Destiny. She's 28 years old, from South Houston, and took her last drink on December 30th, 2023. Great job, Destiny. I want to say thank you to all our Cafe Ari chat hosts. You guys do an incredible job. Listeners, today is going to be a good day. I can feel it. And I've got exciting news I want to share with you. Cafe Ari just submitted its application to the IRS to obtain nonprofit status or become a 501c3 entity. Myself and the team, we've been working on this application for about 8 months, and I'm told in another 4 to 6 months, Cafe Ari will become a nonprofit. Now, what does that mean? Well, we're going to take our yearly service project to the next level, as in we can receive donations, then use those funds to make this planet a better place for all. Another aspect of this is I'm excited about the new structure. We're going to have a board. Now, this board is packed with AF rock stars who have so much life experience, and with all of our minds together, I think we can make some serious strides forward when it comes to shredding the shame around addiction and providing guidance and resources to those who want to quit drinking. Now, listeners, Cafe Ari is our private community, which opened its doors first in April of 2016. We are now 1,400 members strong in all 50 states, both hemispheres, most continents, and this has been my favorite resource in recovery. I love the chat aspect myself. If you want to check out Cafe Ari, check the link in the show notes below. Use the promo code OPPORTUNITY if you want to join to waive the setup fee. And before we get any further, now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp.
I recently had the opportunity to go to a chat by Liz Gilbert, who is the author of Eat, Pray, Love, and she talked a lot about boundaries and priorities. What would you do if you had extra time in your day? Where are your priorities and how are you protecting them? Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/elevator today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/elevator.
Okay, let's get started. Nothing is static, as in everything is constantly changing. The roles we play in life are no exception. Today you might be a Coldplay fan and tomorrow Third Eye Blind. I like them both. Now, nothing is static in terms of your identity. You are always changing. There was a time when your identity was an infant, then a child, then a student, and maybe an official member of the Taylor Swift fan club. Maybe many of you are parents. Some listening are even grandparents. Once upon a time, my identity was fully engrossed with alcohol. First off, I was a drinker, and that was a huge part of my identity. In fact, I used to organize Thursday night beer pong tournaments at my house in college. In fact, I do need to make an official amends to my roommate Layton at the time, who slept right above the beer pong tournament because he had class early Friday morning. My bad, Layton. Now, after college, my identity was a bar owner. I used to be a nightclub DJ in Europe. I identified with Europop, David Guetta, and sleeveless t-shirts, and I'm still a fan of all three. Now, even if I hadn't fallen into the deep chasm of alcohol addiction, those identities would have faded over time. However, I did become full-on addicted to alcohol, spiritually, mentally, and physically, which forced me to abandon those identities, which I very much did not want to do, but death was looming. However, it's a good life practice to embrace these changes as they come, even anticipate these changes in identities. I was speaking with a good friend of mine named Brady, and he explained his transition into an alcohol-free life in a beautiful way. It's quite simple, in fact. He said, "I no longer identify as a drinker." He said this with clarity, he said it with confidence, and he said it with consciousness. And Brady, congrats on 200 plus days without a drink. If you struggle with alcohol, a mantra I want you to repeat yourself at least a couple times a day is, I no longer identify as a drinker. Identities are so powerful because they sit on the throne of the unconscious. Things like, who are you? Well, we are many things. At the soul level, we are all love and probably all wearing sleeveless t-shirts. But on the form level, we are many things at once, and a non-drinker can be one of them. As I said two episodes ago, this can be done. Today, listeners, I am happy to report that I am a non-drinker that will hopefully be working for a nonprofit called Cafe RE in 4 to 6 months when our application is approved. Today, I identify as a non-drinker who chooses to keep his prefrontal cortex, hippocampus, liver, and everything else in this bodily temple in tip-top shape, which is why I don't drink alcohol. Today, I identify as someone who chooses to live life at face value and not to escape into a bottle. Now, an interesting thing or movement is taking place. As we shift our identities on the individual level, at the macro level, we will begin to see this shift as well. I can report I have never tasted a White Claw. Why? Because I identify as a non-drinker. But this may change, and here is why. White Claw now has a non-alcoholic option, which my Google inquiry has confirmed. On their website, whiteclawzero.com, it has the text, finally, an adult drink without the alcohol. Now, I would have remixed it to something like, finally, an adult drink that has 0% chance of ruining your life if you drink too much of our product. Identities of some of the largest beer brands in history of the world are changing their identities seemingly overnight. Heineken's True 0.0 was their best-selling beer in 2019. Athletic Brewing sold $51 million of beer in 2023. That was all non-alcoholic. Companies and brands are changing their identities for one reason only. That is because you are changing your identity. Most people don't understand just how much the customer dictates the direction of commerce. White Claw now has an AF option only because enough customers have changed their identities and are beginning to ask for it. So as your identity changes in regards to alcohol, start asking for what your identity craves. Next time you're at a restaurant, ask if they have an AF drink menu or what AF drink options they have, or even mocktails. Now, I don't know about you, but over the past 10 years, I have seen more menu space dedicated to AF drinks than before. It is 100% okay to change your identity to a non-drinker in a seemingly drunk world. In fact, this is almost silly. I'm writing a podcast episode about how we have to justify and change our identities when we stop consuming the drug that has caused the most carnage in the history of human beings. Listeners, I hope you have enjoyed this intro. I had a good time putting it together. And before we hear from Destiny, let's hear from Athletic Greens. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for 2 years I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 conducts relentless testing to set the standard for purity and potency. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because it's tested for 950 contaminants and banned substances, while the industry standard typically only tests for 10. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune health. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/recovery. That's drinkag1.com/recovery. Check it out. Destiny, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for asking. Destiny, let's get right into this. When was your last drink?
December 30th, 2023.
Yeah. Okay. And before we hit record, you said tomorrow is day 60. How do you feel?
Shocked, because this will be my longest stretch of not drinking for a very long time.
Incredible stuff. Listeners, a couple episodes ago, I did a shout out for interviews for early sobriety. Destiny reached out with this beautiful message. of the challenges, the obstacles of how difficult it can be to quit drinking. And I said, my goodness, I got to get Destiny on the podcast. And then I get another email from Destiny 35 minutes ago that says, nope, not happening. We're canceling. And that was notification that the interview has been canceled. And I told Destiny before I hit record is look, we're always ahead in the hopper. This is not about we need the interviews. Chris and I are always ahead. Like, you can hear this. We're already 3 to 4 weeks ahead. But I reached out to Destiny and I said, hey, let's do this interview. I know the feeling. When I uploaded episode one on February 25th, 2015, I was like, holy shit, what did I just do? So Destiny, you are here. You are whole. And as I told you before, we hit the record button. This audience is so loving. They are so supportive, so non-judgmental, and so accepting of who we are. And they want you to succeed. They want me to succeed, because if we succeed, they succeed. We all succeed. So let's take a deep breath. You and I, Destiny, right now. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. You are doing fantastic. We are 2 to 3 minutes into this interview. All right, let's do it. And before we hear about your journey, how you got almost 60 days away from alcohol, which is so incredible, give listeners, Destiny, a little background about yourself, maybe where you're from, what you do for a living, your age, do you have a family, and then what do you like to do for fun?
Great. I am 28 years old. I'll be 29 in about a week. I have one son who is 3 years old and a husband who I've been married to for almost 4 years. And we have two cats and a dog. I am a nurse.
All right. What kind of dog?
It is a German short hair pointer.
There we go. As a nurse, I've asked this before in the past when I have, you know, we have nurses or medical practitioners on. What role does alcohol play in your job? Like, in terms of the people that you are working with, the patients?
So I worked in the ICU. So it was a lot of, you know, end of the line part of alcoholism, you know, liver transplants and kind of just the result of all of that. And for me, I would go home and I would debrief by drinking after, you know, taking care of these critical patients and having to do so many transfusions and, you know, all of this critical care to take care of this person who pretty much drank themselves to this bed. And then I go home and drink, which was kind of shocking.
Well, in this world, you're a healer. It's what you do. There's a thing called secondary trauma. Psychologists, counselors know that very well, where you take on a little bit of that energy. And of course, you need a way to unwind at the end of your day. Destiny, I came across a stat. I've come across this several times, that 40 to 70% of hospital beds that are occupied have underpinnings to alcohol. Do you see something like that? Maybe like 40 to 50%?
Yeah, I would say for sure. And especially in the role that I'm in now, that's not just the ICU. I review charts across the whole hospital system. And we see a lot of, you know, alcohol withdrawal patients or suicidal ideation, you know, related to alcoholism and motor vehicle accidents, of course, which is, you know, it's costly.
Absolutely. And Destiny, you are on such a beautiful side of this equation, even right in this moment right now. Today is day 59. Tomorrow is day 60. Good job. Good job. We could stop right now and you're a winner in my book. Unbelievable stuff. Now, Destiny, before I turn it over to you about your story, how are you feeling? If you could give us a number from 1 to 10 anxiety level, where are we at?
About a solid 6.
Solid 6. We can work with that. Okay. All right. You're doing awesome. Well, Destiny, let's do what we came here to do. I'm going to let you share in terms of your drinking and alcoholism, whatever you want to call it, but definitely save time for the 59 beautiful days at the end. Go for it.
Great. So I started drinking more steadily in my sophomore year of high school, which would be 2011. And that kind of just progressed. I worked in a bar and restaurant as a hostess, turned waitress, turned bartender, turned manager. And that was all throughout up until 2018, which is when I, you know, graduated nursing school and kind of moved on into that full life career. But kind of backtracking a little bit, throughout nursing school, I was kind of like functioning in this like haze of like a next test to the next event, to the next clinical, to the next rotation. And it felt very stagnant for a while. And then I got my degree and I started working in the hospital straight to the ICU. And that was great. you know, when you're learning and doing new things, you don't realize how much you're debriefing on those 4 days that you have off, because it's the 3 days on, 4 days off. And a lot of the times you want to spend it drinking or out in the sunshine or doing something. And so that kind of really, it was steady for 2018 up until 2020. 2020, of course, I get pregnant and I have my son in May 28th. And it was very hard. I immediately knew I was going to have some postpartum issues. So I contacted my doctor, and all of the stress from the ICU was already there, let alone a pandemic, you know, taking away. And that was good. The newborn phase was like chaotic. You kind of forget it all. And I think that's how they trick you into having a second. And along with that, I got married to my husband, and it was also pandemic wedding and very crazy. But as that progressed, as I'm going back to work, working in a COVID ICU, worried about bringing that home to my son, all of those stressors led me to drink. It was mimosas or margaritas or Sunday fun day, drinks by the pool, like never ending. There was always an excuse to drink. My son's first birthday, we had a margarita machine, second and third birthday as well. I don't know how that became a tradition.
Destiny, got a question. So you go to nursing school, you get married, you have a child. I don't know if it was all in that order. Life is being lived, right? Like, you're doing it. Was there a time when you were a normal drinker? I heard you say the word functioning, and usually that's still we're not. But, you know, what role was alcohol playing through these steps of your life? And maybe share how much you were drinking.
I think I was only a normal drinker throughout high school, you know, when it's illegal for me to actually be drinking, because I would go to house parties and I knew I had to drive home. So I had to, you know, stay level. But as soon as I started bartending, I think that's when it really hit, because I was 17 and I bartended for about a month, probably when I shouldn't have been. And then it really just ramped. I don't remember like a time where it was actually slow or what I would call normal drinking. It was a shot at 9 p.m. when we were about to start the bar, shot at 12 and a shot at 2, you know, and we're talking like rumplements, like,
sure,
you know, something that we knew was going to get us through the long shift and crazy people out in the bars. And so I drank a lot, and I cost myself, you know, relationships in that job and kind of my reputation in that sense. But I always came back. I always, you know, repented, I guess this you would call it, and kind of redeemed myself as a hard worker and a manager and an employee to this company that I worked for forever, for all throughout my high school and nursing school career.
Destiny, you are doing fantastic. You're doing great. How are you feeling? You doing okay?
A little hot. My cheeks are red.
Gotcha. You're doing fantastic. Okay. So nursing school, you have a child, you get married. What's up, pandemic? Yeah. Pick up from there.
Yeah. So a lot of big life changes. And as well as me going through these life changes, my friends are going through these changes, and, you know, baby showers, bachelorette parties, all of these things. I would always find myself being the drunkest in the room, or the one that people would have to take care of at the end of the night, and or falling asleep where I sat. So I'm very small in stature. So my husband would always kind of be like, hey, you're kind of reaching your point. Like, you're starting to get a little sleepy. Like, maybe you should stop. And I'm just like, nope, I'm fine. I'm good. And then all of a sudden it's lights out. It never came with a warning as far as like blacking out. It was very common. So that's kind of gone on all the way up until, you know, December 30th. You know, it was very much light drink until I don't remember. I function for a little while after and I don't remember. And then I wake up wondering, who's mad at me? Where's my car? Is everything okay? And am I in my own house. You know, kind of realizing that and doing it so many times, it started to dawn on me that I'm the problem in what I was drinking to resolve or avoid. A lot of it was avoidance, I think.
So Destiny, you got a lot of chunks of sobriety time in there. Like I read your email, there was a couple of weeks here, there's a bunch of days there, you know, before this stretch. You're 28 years old right now. When was that inner voice loud enough to say, you know, we got to stop? And then did you try to moderate?
Yeah, for sure. I think my first big stretch was probably not too long after my 21st birthday. I tried to stop because I knew I went out and I drank really hard in New Orleans and I came home and my relationship was just rocky. And I think alcohol-induced arguments, I guess you can call them, kind of enhanced those things and things that were said. So trying to stop was kind of hard. And then I would find myself in an event or a wedding, or the next event would come and I'm drinking again. And then kind of the cycle, this like guilt cycle that I would put myself through, and I'd do really good. And then I'd, you know, the next event would come.
Now, I think it's hard to quit drinking at any decade or any age you are, but my goodness, in the Western world, quitting drinking in your 20s, it's like, are you kidding me? There's a bachelor party I got to go to, and then a baby shower, and then the wedding. I hear you there. I got tripped up on many of those events. Okay, Destiny, I'm wondering if you tried to formulate the idea in your mind, if there was an idea arriving that you drink more than everybody else or people don't drink like you. At first, we surround ourselves with people that drink like ourselves to really appease these voices, but really nobody could drink the levels that I could. And I was reaching a conclusion that I didn't want to land at in my late 20s, saying, wait a second, I don't think they're drinking four beers before showing up at the party. I don't think they're drinking two for every one at the event. And I definitely don't think when they go home, they're having a full-on party alone with a liquor cabinet, right? Like, were you realizing in your 20s that, you know, you might be drinking at a pace that's not like your friends?
For sure. And a lot of those friends were people that I worked with in the bar. And, you know, that it's all felt normal. But looking back again to being the drunkest one in the room and them having to tell me what I did the night before or take care of me, that was kind of eye-opening. I was like, maybe I am drinking too much. Maybe I don't know my limit, but everyone else is still handing me a drink. So I must be okay. Like, it must still be fine to be drinking. You know, if there's my husband was kind of one of the bigger factors in, you know, the most recent years, past 2 years or so, he would say like, oh, well, you're drinking too much. And I'm like, I would kind of deflect the and put blame on him and be like, well, what did you expect? We went to a bottomless mimosas. Like, what did you expect? You know, you kept getting me gin and tonic.
I hear you. What do you expect? I'm on a cruise and we bought the unlimited booze package. Yeah. What do you expect? I'm in my 20s and I'm going through these life events that are all anchored to alcohol, right? Getting sober in your 20s is, I think, a challenge for sure. But then you have the whole rest of your life. You're building the foundation for your 30s, your 40s, your 50s. And I'm so happy that I also went through this in my 20s. It's hard. It is a challenge watching your friends drink at their weddings. It is a challenge sitting bachelor parties out. It's what I had to do. I just had to do that a couple times. Okay. So there is a progression of this. Did you notice that it was getting worse?
Yes. There was a period in between leaving the ICU and coming to my now current nursing job where I work from home. And in that time period, I was timing out beers, like how early would I have to start drinking to get a buzz, go do what I wanted to do, such as going to get my nails done or my toes done and having a couple mimosas there, then meeting a friend for lunch, having a couple margaritas there, and then either going and laying out by the pool and having a beer. How long did I have for that last drink before I had to go and drive and function as a parent, you know, after doing what I wanted to do, after getting that buzz? That was kind of scary. And that's where I really realized, like, it clicked in my head that it was very dangerous. I wasn't just putting myself in in harm's way. I was also putting my son at risk for, you know, just anything. He was very young. He was mobile, but couldn't really speak for himself. And that was a very shameful feeling.
Sure. And we all understand it, right? Really, no explanations are needed with this audience. Now, somewhere in your email, you talk about the off switch being faulty or broken. Can you comment on that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. It was always on. It was always on. And like I said, it was on until the lights went out and it came without warning. And it just, the happy mood, I was drinking for that, but I never, that feeling kind of stopped. I stopped getting to the point of where I could actually, I guess, enjoy the drunk feeling. And it was just lights out and I was functioning, but not knowing it. And it was very scary. Not knowing when to stop was a big, big issue for me.
Would you mind sharing if you had a rock bottom moment? For a lot of us, there's many, but was there one moment that it's like, all right, I gotta depart from alcohol?
My marriage, I guess, in the last couple of months was just right on the cusp. And I knew alcohol was not serving me and helping get my emotions out to where I could really tell my husband how I'm feeling or really devote time into what I kept telling myself I wanted to do. And really just, I guess, I felt very stagnant when I was drinking and I had all these plans that I wanted to do, but it felt like there was this like wall that I kept running into, which I can picture the wall as being alcohol, and everything else was on the other side, like a happy marriage, healthy life, you know, progression in my career. So I think that was my rock bottom, realizing that I wasn't going to get anywhere without kind of breaking down what my issue is with alcohol.
Destiny, that was a beautiful way to say that, where alcohol will feed us lies of saying, you know, me, alcohol is included with all your hopes and dreams. But I had a realization, and it sounds like insane to say this is a breakthrough, a realization, but I realized just what you said, everything that I wanted, hopes, dreams, expansiveness, wife, family, all that fun stuff, that can't involve alcohol. And on the flip side, if I have alcohol, that's okay, but I can't have the happy life. I just can't have both. And when I framed that for myself, I could see it so clearly, almost without any like shame or judgment. Say, hey, Paul, if you choose alcohol, that's fine, but you can't have this. And if you want that, then you can't have this. So beautiful how you said that. And then once you had that realization, you know, how did you start logging these days? Was it AA? Did you start listening to podcasts? Were there other support groups? Reach out to other sober people?
It was very cold turkey. And it was very hard because it was, you know, at the end of the holidays, I was like, well, it would just sound nice to like be sober, like right before the end of the year, you know, and really, let's see how long I can go. And I'm 60 days in, and that's the longest stretch, and it feels really good. And I think listening to the podcast has really helped. I do have a couple sober friends, and I guess just surrounding myself with those people who support me and not drinking has been really helpful. I have not really dipped my toe in the AA waters. I've looked up where meetings are just in case I ever feel like I need to get to that point. I don't think I'm there yet. Been reading a lot of books. This Naked Mind was a really good one. And listening to the podcast, kind of binging it.
Destiny, what was that first week like without alcohol?
Oh, it was very annoying. I was very on edge and just like, am I going to cut myself short this time and let the other foot drop? Or I was constantly thinking about, okay, am I for sure doing this? Am I sure I'm doing this? It was a lot of gym time in the gym. If I wasn't doing something, I was making myself go to the gym, run a couple miles, lift a couple weights, and get my mind off of it to where I'm tired enough to where I just go to sleep.
Where do you think that strength was coming from? Was it inner strength? What is your faith like?
It was probably just inner, a little internal and external motivators. Internal being my mind will just, you know, wander and kind of hit the same brick multiple times, and it doesn't crack until I move my body or get my mind off of it. And then external factors were you know, my son and my husband and that those, all of those relationships that just kind of felt like they were borderline.
Destiny, I feel one of the most important things or most effective things is burning the ships. And that's how we phrase it here, which means being authentic and honest with those who are closest to us in our lives. How is it with your husband? Does he know everything?
Yeah, he knows everything. And that was, you know, really hard. And he's doing a lot of healing from my actions. And it's, we're taking it a day at a time. We're in marriage counseling, and he's actually started to work on his alcohol consumption as well. And it doesn't bother me that he drinks, because I don't know, he'll get there when he gets there, if he feels like he needs to. But yeah, our marriage is day by day right now, and it's good.
And do you have a routine throughout the day when you wake up? Is it mapped out what's going to go down in terms of in your sobriety?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like I said, I work from home, and the temptation of alcohol, we have, it's here in the house, but I never feel like it was never like a wake up daily drinking type of thing. It was more social day to day. It's just work and son and walking the dog, playing fetch with the dog, and dinner in bed.
Yeah, life is being lived on life's terms at face value. Now, in your email, you mentioned you are in uncharted waters, 59 days, and you also feel like the foot is going to drop, right? And I think some around that in the email as well was like self-loathing. Do you love yourself enough for sobriety? Do you even deserve this? Let's unpack that for a bit. You know, how are you feeling right now?
I still have a lot of self-doubt that I can, you know, be successful and do what I say I'm going to do, which is not drink. I've let myself down a lot of times in the past by saying that, and then my actions don't align. But I still got a lot of work to do with myself, and that's for me and my personal therapist. A lot of therapy has been helping kind of shine a light on how I like to process and avoid things. I'm trying to be more open with, you know, that, I guess. When something's bothering me, I have to say it instead of holding it in and waiting for this like big eruption. There's like this little, you know, demon on my shoulder that's like, you're fine. You're going to be okay. You can drink. This is just temporary. It's fine. You really don't have a problem. You're young. You'll fix it and then you can go back to it. It'll be okay. No, it's not going to be good.
So Destiny, I think we undercut that achievement or what we're doing right there when you say, you know, but there's still this voice that says, you know, I got it. It's going to be fine this time. I think we are missing the milestone right there, because I think 98% of the population, they can't distinguish between the voices. It's just them. There's an incessant stream of thoughts that's never stopped. But Destiny, for you to be able to sit there and have a consciousness viewing the egoic voice, because that's what it is, and I have an ego too, but you're viewing that voice from a different stance, seeing the voice, listening to the voice saying things are going to be fine this time. Oh, it's probably just going to be one. We've done 59 days. It'll be different. But what I'm saying here is this is such a grand achievement. In some places in the East, this would be called enlightenment, where you can step away from the ego and see it or hear it from a separate consciousness. And this goes out to all listeners as well. Like if you can see that voice or hear that voice, that's a major step forward in your own personal human journey. And then how do you, I don't want to say combat that voice, because I don't like that verbiage. We can't combat an addiction. We can't fight that voice. But how do you hear it and almost soften it and almost say, yeah, I hear you, but I'm going to go a different direction. What does that look like for you?
Playing the tape forward is one of the, I guess, the sayings I've heard in kind of what will happen if I take a first drink, it will lead to a second, or you give a mouse a cookie type of scenario. I think that's how I kind of tune it out. I kind of bring some logic in and really think about what it would mean to take a drink, or what is it really getting me? Probably nothing. The pointless part of drinking, I guess, is what do you get? You get a hangover, or you get a bad mood, or you get an argument with someone you love, and it's just not fun.
Yeah, major tool you just dropped right there, playing the tape forward. I firmly believe you can't think yourself out of an addiction. If we would, I wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be here. But we can accurately predict what's going to go down. Is it just going to be one or two? Well, what happened the last 50 times we drank? So you play the tape forward. You said, oh, you know, I'm probably going to feel like shit tomorrow, or I definitely won't feel good tomorrow. I love that exercise. Listeners, an incredible tool. This is called playing the tape forward. What do you think is going to happen when that convincing voice, you know, this egoic base says, hey, let's do it. Everyone else is drinking. We deserve this. Yeah, unbelievable stuff. And how are you feeling right now? We're on the home stretch of this interview. You're doing great, Destiny.
Hanging in there.
Okay. I appreciate your honesty. I got one more question before we hit the rapid fire round. Destiny, when cravings come, what do you do?
Crack a Diet Coke. Or I just kind of sit with it for a moment. And, you know, again, like I said, the craving is kind of the trigger. Like what would it get me? Probably nothing. Playing the tape forward is what I do anytime. That's all I've got right now in my little toolbox as far as, you know, sobriety tools. It's very small right now.
And that's okay, because it can build, right? And this is part of it. This is part of it. In any program, connecting with somebody else who's on the same alcohol-free journey is like the number one thing. You go to AA, you know, connect with another alcoholic, however you want to phrase it. This is it. This is it right now. And it just so happens this conversation might be heard by a couple people, Destiny, but it's also going to help a lot of people. And as we, before I hit record, I say, hey, look, there's a chance this is going to be beneficial to all parties. It's going to help you. It's going to help the RE podcast. It's going to help me. And it's going to help a ton of listeners. That's beautiful all across the board. So Destiny, true rock star in my book. We have hit the rapid fire round. If you need to answer these questions in 15 to 30 seconds, that would be great. Are you ready?
I think so. I'm ready.
Let's do it. Destiny, number one, what's the one thing you've learned about yourself on this journey?
I am stronger than I think. I can do hard things.
Absolutely. Case in point right now. Number two, what is your best sober moment?
Playing in the yard with my son and our dog. You know, they're both playing fetch at the same time, and they're on rotation, and it's a nice sunny day. It's pretty much, you can get that any day, but it's been great.
Maybe I just heard it. Is it a Diet Coke, your favorite alcohol-free drink?
Yes, good Diet Coke.
All right, here's an easy one. What's the point of life?
To live it and remember it.
Life is being lived right now. What's your favorite 90s or 2000s band?
Oh, you bumped it up because of my age, right? Okay.
Yeah, you got it.
I was ready for the 80s band. No idea. 90s, maybe.
Did you have an 80s band?
Yeah. Four Non-Blonde.
What's up? That's their song. All right. What has an alcohol-free life made possible for you?
Commitment. Sticking to what I say I'm going to do and doing it, and whether that's in my relationships, health, you know, career, or, you know, personal education.
And then what's your favorite ice cream flavor?
Probably Bluebell vanilla.
All right. And what parting piece of guidance can you give the listeners?
If you're thinking about it, you should probably do it.
And we home stretch. I got one last question for you, and you already know the answer. You know what's coming. Give listeners your own. You might need to ditch the booze if line.
You might need to ditch the booze if you don't know how you got home last night.
Fully checks out. Destiny, that was incredible. I'm so happy for you. 60 days tomorrow. You got this with the support of your friends. I got your back. The audience has your back. Stay connected. Play that tape forward. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
One more note on Cafe Ari becoming a nonprofit and how we can potentially work with Big Alcohol. Now hang with me for a second. For our last service project in Costa Rica, we picked up trash to the tune of 18 huge bags of waste that would have ended up in the ocean. A lot of it was alcohol containers and cans, as you might imagine. Now, once we build our philanthropy team more, once we are a nonprofit, I plan on pinging Big Alcohol and asking them for donations when we go to pick up their own trash. This is the responsible thing for Big Alcohol to do, and we'll see if this goes through. So this is me sending a message to Big Alcohol again. Check your inbox soon. When we become a nonprofit, we're going to ping you and ask for a donation for our service projects to help pick up trash on this planet, knowing that a lot of the trash is alcohol containers. All right, Recovery Elevator, I love you guys. Let's go big, because eventually we'll all go home.